no Chad or Kate today, so I don't know what we're going to talk about. They usually require Chad's hoiking up hydraulic jack. There is someone anonymous. I've unmuted you. Who are you? Can you speak a little louder?
Hello.
Yeah, speak louder, buddy.
Okay.
Oh, it's Deb from Boston. Boy, that's even worse. What the hell are we going to do with that? Look, nobody, none of my colleagues are here. There's no Jermaine, no Chad, no Cade, no Eben. Eben doesn't think she can make it too much at this hour. So, looks pretty bad. So what are you going to say? Can you redeem your reputation by making an interesting conversation?
Let's talk about the Knights Templar.
Okay.
Were they really good people, or were they really not, like, were they against society?
They were like you and all human beings trying to ascend, and they got pretty good at it. And the what's not known about them that we've learned from Ion is that they protected the temples of Solomon. So they were around before 1000 AD, or whatever they say, 1000 after Christ. That's when the Templars are rumored to have started. But they go back to Moses' time, or whenever the first temple was built, and whenever that was happening. Maybe it's a little after Moses. So they were before Christianity. Now, I have a long interview I did on May 1999. It's on my timeline on the Illuminati, and I explain how the Knights Templars show up in the 1100s, say, and the medieval period, and because of the increasing opportunities of visual space that were starting to be rebuilt after the Dark Ages, they jumped in ahead of everybody and became a big banking empire. And but the important thing is that they faded out because they didn't have the printing press. So without the printing press, they couldn't really spread the way that oligarchic banking out of Austria and Hungary, the Austrian-Hungarian Empire, the Spanish Empire, and those places, and then later England and France. That was a result of the printing press, and the Knights Templars missed the boat and went underground, or however they retrieved, preserved themselves, and they did keep going and are still around, and they were pretty good at parallel worlding and things like that. So, with anybody... can we blame you, Deb, for the Vietnam War or the present crisis in Iraq? You know, it's all of humanity gets involved in that. So I don't know. The Knights Templars might have been a good force in the later era that we know about because they got civilization renewed, visual space biased going, and they had fights with the Arabs. So we can't judge anybody on that level. I mean, you're not
were
a good
they
person.
A certain, like,
I'm not a good
person.
You're not a bad person. I'm not a bad person. We don't encourage that kind of. And if there were any youth, we wouldn't call them good or bad. So we don't call anybody. We call them five-bodied. Five-bodied, and they're engaged in a six-bodied orgy right now. We have a YouTube channel, I think it is, called Six-Bodied Orgy. Or maybe it's a Facebook page, and the YouTube channel is McLuhan's novel. I can't remember. Remember, I don't go there often. So I am the content on it, but I'm not a narcissist. I don't go looking and studying what I did, right? I don't dwell on myself. I'm too busy creating a new day every day. Mm-hmm. And that's not being good or bad.
Correct.
That's living to the hilt, living with much slack.
Exactly. Yep.
Okay, so what else you want to say about the Templars? We've dismissed
well,
the category.
Well, I heard something about it, and it sounded negative, but I don't remember exactly what I heard or read. And so it feels like it's portrayed in a negative way, and then you hear neutral stuff. So I don't have an opinion about them.
Right. Well, the Illuminati and those that were rumored to be part of the Illuminati are always given a bad name today. Because we're supposedly a democratic, egalitarian world, at least in the West, and people don't like the idea of elites. I mean, it was controversial that Ion suggested we put a pyramid on our first website, howionic.com. That implies hierarchy. But Ion knew that we were going to become a kind of temporary hierarchy or Illuminati, our operation. So we had no qualms in being what we appeared to be.
Mm-hmm.
And but we're not the oligarchy in the old sense. We're not out to conquer any territory or conquer the human spirit or anything. We're just the go-to switchboard for the best information right now.
Mm-hmm.
We have the authority of knowledge, is the phrase that McLuhan used.
Mm-hmm. Did the Knights Templar, are they like from France, England? Are they a certain...
No, they're all over the place. They overlap with the Freemasons and whatever other secret groups there are. And my father was a member of these groups, some faction of them, when I grew up in Paris, and that's in my diaries. I call them the Secret Council of Ten. They were known through the Holy Blood and Holy Grail books as the Priory of Sion, and the overlapping of people on that level means these distinctions of Freemason, Rosicrucian, Illuminati, Templars, Knights of Malta, whatever other names come up, are pretty well an illusion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't apply to these people. When you're able to access other worlds and come back and forth this world, you're not even that concerned about what tragedies happen here. You don't identify with this world.
There's a thing that happened, I don't remember the name, where the ship, the people turned into, like, part of the ship, like they...
Oh, that's the 1943, the Philadelphia experiment.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you believe that?
Well, I've got descriptions of it, explanations of it through the Evergreens, and Ion has talked about it. The Al Bielek, Duncan Cameron, forget the other guy, that Montauk trio, that's total
exactly, exactly.
Bullshit. That is bullshit. And,
what were the name? Was there a guy, have you ever heard of Peter Moon or something like that?
Yes, he wrote the books, but it's Duncan Cameron, Al Bielek, and the third guy, the overweight guy. I knew
those
these people.
Those aren't real?
No, they're real people, but they're... basically,
they made
making
up the
shit
story.
Up. They made all shit, yeah. And there are all kinds of bad rumors about them in New York City when I was there. They were using the whatever kook charisma they got to exploit young people. And then I met Duncan Cameron in Toronto in 2002.
Did you?
2000. Yes, he got involved with our radio show up there called Cloak and Dagger. And Nelson Thal befriended him. And he invited me to a home, and there I met Duncan. And Duncan was ridiculous. There was a couple of women there protecting him, but he came out, interacted with me slightly, and then ran off in the back room and hid. Now, I think he was doing some kind of hands-on healing or chakra massage, so the women were getting that. But then he eventually came out, and we started talking, and I started categorizing his biases and explaining what his neurosis really was rooted in, and he sort of listened to that. So then we went outside, and he didn't say much in front of the women, but then we went out back in the backyard and talked for half an hour or so, and I explained a bit more about what was going on to him and this and that, like I was explaining the hallucinatory world he'd gotten himself into, and it was a probe to see how he responded. So we had an okay conversation, and then I went back to New York City. And then I heard that he told the women that I was a medium and didn't know it.
Oh, it was, wow. You had an exciting life.
Beg your pardon?
You've had an exciting life with all these weird encounters.
Well, that's an understatement. I've had the most fantastic life, and it's just getting started, that any human's ever had, really, when we get to the details and what's going to happen next. Now, let me bring in Jermaine came in and then went out. So come on back in, Jermaine. Now, we got Sean.
I'm here.
Okay, you came through the other way. We're talking to Deb in Boston. We're hoping she can redeem her conversational ability, so she's brought up the topic of Knights Templars. And now we're talking about Duncan Cameron, who she has read about and intrigued by. So he told, he spread the word that I was an unconscious psychic. And my theory is what he picked up was an incomplete perception of my five-bodied knowledge and abilities. And he could only put it into this idea that Bob was a medium but didn't know it. Well, he didn't know how I was a medium in the other bodies, or a psychic or whatever, a genius in the other bodies. And so he didn't know how to perceive that. So he decided that I was a medium in his terms, but unconscious. So it was a distortion. He had a distorted view of me, but I don't think he ever looked into what we were doing. I don't think he knows about Ion or anything. I've never heard of
him. That time, Ion didn't exist, correct?
That's right. He didn't show up till 7 years later. And
now, when did you meet Cameron?
September 2002.
Oh.
And I was on the radio show with Nelson, and then they started. Then I left the show in November 2002. I didn't like what Nelson was doing, so. I think they featured a lot of Duncan and Cameron people, that kind of information, on the show after I left. Because I was staying at Nelson Thal's in September 2002, and I noticed they had a video of these Montauk guys. And they were all looking at it and fascinated by it. But I had already gone through them because I used to see that kind of video, that kind of information on a show called UFO AZ, which was out of Tucson, Arizona. Ted Lohman and his colleague, I forget her name, they did stuff on UFOs in Arizona, so it was called UFO AZ. But they ended up interviewing everybody. So from 93 to 2000, I saw all these shows with all the people that we ever heard of that fringe world, you know, from David Icke over to Richard Hoagland and everybody. And so I was well familiar with the Montauk gang. And when I went out to Tucson in May 1999 to interview and document the life of Peggy Mellon Hitchcock, Walter introduced me to Ted Lohman, so he wanted to interview me, so he interviewed me for his show in May 99. And then when Bob Brown, I think his name was, of the International UFO Congress, saw it, he said, "We got to have this guy at the conference." So I went to the Mesquite, Nevada conference in August 99. August 17th, and in the morning of my talk, before I get the talk, huge earthquake in Athens, Greece, or someplace. Americans were killed. So I knew I was going to do a heavy talk. I was already shaking up the world. And you can go on my timeline and see that 2.5-3 hour presentation, me talking about my prior Scion knowledge about the UFOs and all that. And I introduced the D-Cell and Eben Ray. You can see her. That's where I met Eben, and she quizzes me on the video in the question period. So it turned out to be a pretty interesting situation with Ted Lohman and UFO AZ. So I paid them back for what they had informed me all through the 90s in New York City on Manhattan Neighborhood Network. That was the local free access channel, public access channel.
Yep.
So Nelson and them were in Toronto. They didn't know about all this stuff, so they were just getting caught up in it when I met them, and I didn't fall for it and didn't get involved with them, with Duncan and the other guy.
Oh, so you know Peter Moon too?
No, I never met him. I never read his books. Mark Stallman read his books and told me about them, but I knew that Peter Moon didn't understand what was going on because he didn't have access to the Evergreens. All I had to do was go to the Evergreens, channeled by Michael Blake Reed, and find out what was going on. And they could explain anything. The Billy Myers case, a lot of people know about that. That was explained very interestingly by the Evergreens. So I used to, all through the 90s, see about these different fringe groups and fringe movements and memes. on UFOAZ, and then I'd go to Toronto and talk to the Evergreens about them. So I have an incredible inventory. We could even maybe play some of that stuff about different people.
Do you think that you're interested in the occult, Blake?
Well, I use what's called the occult. I use cosmic awareness and the Evergreens.
Oh,
now, Ian is not in the occult. Ian is a talking hologram. Let's call from now on, Jermaine, we're referring to Ian not as a channeled entity. We never liked that, never really said it. But I've decided let's just call it a talking hologram because Ian can appear and speak without going through JW, and I've seen him on Skype be the hologram. So that's new. We have a talking hologram, which is, I said that technology would come alive and start talking to us, and I call it the Android meme. Well, we have a competing talking hologram via Ion to counter the effects, the disservices of the Android meme. That's the amazing situation we're in, Deb, which you slowly or dimly might begin to perceive what you're dealing with here. But
how about that girl who called and you were explaining it to her? She had just called because I was on another show just when you started. They ended some chakra meditation.
Yeah.
And then you came on right when it ended. Okay. But there was a girl who called, and she said she didn't know much about it, and you were trying to explain it to her, and then you lost her, and she never called back.
So right, I remember that.
Yeah, and at least I'm on with the game, but I don't know, you know, I'm not a professional at it, but, you know.
Well, at least you're staying with it and continuing to bug us. That's good. Keep coming back to try to understand what I'm saying. Yes, that's good.
Thank you. No, it's a difficult, you know, thing to grasp when you don't have normal people talking about it every day.
It's impossible to grasp. It's impossible.
It is.
I mean, you know, I just barely claim to understand what's going on.
Yeah, I wonder why you understood it better than most people. I don't know.
Well, because I did, because I began, I mean, when I was a teenager or something, way back there, for some reason, in Paris, I read this book on a psychic in the 19th century, some woman psychic in England who probably was part of the famous psychic research thing, the British Society for Psychical Research. A lot of famous people were involved with that, including W.B. Yeats and the Order of the Golden Dawn people. And I read about, as a young mind, I said, look at this. They got somebody asked a question, and then a darker transcript, there's someone saying something and talking to spirits. Like, what is this? So I don't know what I actually perceived of that, but I'm sure that had some impact on me. And then I, many decades later, discovered cosmic awareness through Dave Worster, and then I did the Evergreens. You have to understand, I spent like $20,000 from 1980 to 2004. I did 64 sessions over an hour each with the Evergreens, and that was the most phenomenal channeling ever because they were real. They could talk about anything. What?
You paid them?
Yes, it used to be $500 a session.
And what did they
heal?
What did they do? They heal you?
No. They like let's just take my inventory. I have my inventory here, and of my notes for when I started doing the session. So the first session was June 4th, 1980. So I pull out the piece of paper. I'll be careful not to, you know, expose whatever shouldn't be exposed, but. So I had done cosmic awareness in the late 60s, early 70s. I went to psychic Garrett Dean in Halifax, recommended a couple interesting people. One of them in 1972, Bertie Catchings, I found out about her. That was in May 71. She told me I'd be a spiritual gift to the masses. So I started to have wacky stuff said to me very early, right? That's 44 years ago. And then I met a few other psychics Garrett Dean turned me on to in Halifax. So then when I was living in Toronto, the Evergreen showed up. I was an expert on finding really good mediums, not the crackpots. And I was really lucky.
What was the reason?
Well, I was a spiritual gift to the masses, and I was preparing for my work to go before you, to do my father's work, to quote Jesus, one of my earlier predecessors who fucked up royally.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah. Yes,
did you feel
Eliza?
Did you feel
Eliza is here? We should make Eliza a co-host. She's here so often.
So that just reminded, Deb's question reminded me something. Did you feel some type of massage from the evergreens the way we do from Ion?
Yes. It probably was. I never got numbed out, but maybe I was good at it, so I didn't get numb. But, no, I always felt really good after a session.
You paid them to kind of, like,
they paid me to talk to them. So look, here's what you do: you make an appointment. You go to a hotel room, which was always the Town Inn on Church Street. I think it was 620 Church Street, which was perpendicular to the main intersection in Toronto between Yonge Street and Bloor Street. So one street to the east is Church Street. Now, if you look at my interview by Daniel Libby, who called in last week or the week before or something, from Toronto, he videotaped me and Brian Taylor, who's known as Minimax on the chat line on Saturdays, in this restaurant. But at the very beginning, I'm meeting Daniel on the street corner, and it's a restaurant across the street from Town Inn. So you see me walking over from Town Inn. So if you look closely at that building, behind me as I walk across the rainy street, you'll see the Town Inn. And I stayed at the Town Inn just for old sake, because that's where I did many sessions for many years at the Town Inn. That's where Michael Blake Reed and his wife Ellie like to stay. And the hotel understood what they were doing, and so all kinds of normal and famous people would come through the hotel between 1986 and 2004 to have sessions with the Evergreens, which were 6,500 to 7,000 entities channeled through Michael Blake Reed. And when I first heard about that in 1980, I was amazed. What? This guy's got 6,000 entities? I was used to one entity or one thing channeled through somebody. And then they also had such a high-tech recordings. They could do it over the phone. They just were the most professional, most modern phenomenon of channeling ever, and then they turned out to be very useful. So did I answer your question, Deb? So you would pay to talk to the Evergreens, and the sessions would be an hour long.
Can you give us a sample?
Well, you can go on Ian and Bob. There's a whole section of Evergreen sessions. Maybe we'll go over there and click on it or something, but you can hear it. But my very first session, June 4th, 1980, and I'm doing it by phone. I just heard about him like a month before being interviewed on Jane Houghton's show on Q107. I had turned Jane Houghton on to Beater. I think she interviewed Beater, and I turned her on to Mae Brussel and things like that. And so she interviewed Michael Blake Reed, I think, and that's how I heard about it. So my first question was about ground Miller's brand. Like Carolyn was making me eat what was that stuff called? Brewer's yeast and things since the early 70s. So for some reason I was asking about ground Miller's brand. Then I was asking about zinc. And look, I'm asking about magnesium.
Exactly.
And then I asked, I don't know. Maybe I asked something about my health and the Evergreens were saying these points. Eat ground Miller's brand. Get some zinc. Get some magnesium. So I'm just scribbling these notes down after when I would get a recording, go home and listen to it, then I would make an inventory. So then my next topic is synergistic responses of the mind. I don't know what the heck that is. We could go back and play the tape maybe, but I don't know if I want to put that personal stuff out. But anyways, synergistic is the term that Robert Guffey, G-U-F-F, Robert Guffey wrote that first article on me about how the Matrix movie was about me. He called it synergistic linguistics or something, in the Tetrad manager. So
were you
funny.
Keanu?
Well, Keanu was, yes, Keanu. They were trying to make a movie about me, but it was a bit too literal. And they wanted Jean Beaudrillard, someone I knew, a good follow-up of McLuhan. They wanted him to help consult on the second and third parts, but he said, no, I'm not going to work with you guys. You're making a movie about the Matrix that the Matrix would make. So he didn't think it was perceptive enough. But and I would partly agree with him, but it doesn't matter. It's a popularization. It's the Android mean trying to counter whatever I'm doing and distort it. And so they made a movie about me.
Oh, okay.
Big deal. Where did that get me? All I got was a T-shirt. And a lot of interviews because people were intrigued by that.
Are you guys on Facebook? All of you?
Well, yes, we have a Facebook page. I never go to it. I don't know what's going on there. I think Jermaine is supposed to be doing something there, and Kate's supposed to be doing. I don't know if Jermaine made the Instagram of all the faces, or is that on our Facebook page, Jermaine?
No, on Instagram.
Instagram. Are you adding to that?
Here and there, yes.
Yeah, like I'm not going to be the overseer, the foreman running around. Okay, did Jermaine do this? You guys are co-hosts. You're equally responsible for the show. You make this, make the websites or do what you're supposed to do there. I'm too busy running the goddamn world to be fucking around with these little didads.
Small things.
High profile for you guys, right?
Well, so where on Facebook are you?
You're on what?
What's your Facebook, the group called or whatever?
It's called What Youth, I think. What the fuck, What Youth? WTF, What Youth?
Yeah.
Dot Twitter. No, what is the Facebook page, Jermaine? Do you know?
Well, I don't. I do the Instagram. If you have Instagram, it's WTF What Youth.
Oh, okay.
That's the Instagram. Do you do Instagram,
yeah.
Deb?
No, I only do Facebook. I'm on Facebook.
Okay. Well, we do have a What Youth Facebook page. Maybe someone will point out what it's called. That technically, what it is. And Kate usually was taking responsibility for that, and I don't know what she's been doing there. You see, this show, we're trying to reach the youth, but there ain't no youth. And I'm doing this show for reasons that, you know, the Ionic wants to happen. And I'm not measuring it according to anything that one would look and judge success by. This is, I enjoy doing it with the, quote, younger people. And we're doing it, and it's maybe not going to be relevant until 2,000 years from now, or it is very important, and just the fact that I'm interacting with other people without ION has devastating effects and maybe keeping Boston, you know, free from an earthquake or something. You know, I got it all covered here.
But I've been to Montauk.
Yes, and so have I, yeah. And what do you want to say about it?
Oh, no, my friend who's really into Peter Moon, she passed. She was like 70 years old, and she was into Montauk. And when I told her I was in, you know, I had been there, she was interested. She asked me all these questions because she believes that there's something underground there that they built. I forget the whole explanation.
Okay, here's what you got to do. Get Thomas Pynchon's latest novel. Came out in 2013 called Bleeding Edge, not Leading Edge, Bleeding Edge. It's about New York City, and it's about me and Carolyn and the scene we were doing before, just before 9-1-1. But there's a lot about Montauk in there. Pynchon, he lives in New York City, and he makes it part of the, quote, novel. It's very interesting. That's another indication of how it's about me and Carolyn, because he's covering a lot of the themes that I was involved with in different ways, and he just novelizes it. You know, for some reason, he's totally tuned into us. And is novelizing, you know, Dobbstown and Iondome. So you want to read that. You want to see how he presents it.
You're in a book?
Yes, I'm in many books.
Yeah,
Finnegan's Wake is about me and Carolyn. No, really, because we are the culmination of history and mortar and cultural dreaming, we are referenced all the way. I mean, Carolyn's in the Sistine Chapel, according to ION. I didn't know this. Ion's telling me this. Did you know that I handed the tablets, the clay tablets, to Moses? Yes, it is funny, but it's not unserious. Supposedly.
So we have to worship you because you're like...
No, you have to just fuck me. That's all you have to do. Just fuck me. That's good enough. You know,
no,
I'll fuck
no.
You. I'll pass you by. See, now you won't even do it. See, look at that. You'd rather worship than fuck me. So what do I get? I don't get nothing out of fucking worshiping, so it's not even worth it.
How do we know?
When I come to Boston, Deb, I'll give you an opportunity to correct that desire there, what you just said.
Oh, you're nuts.
No, I'm a very nice person.
You would like this neighbor I have, right? He's got, like, this home. It's huge. And then he's got all these writings on it, like, all these sayings like, don't trust your, you know, your conscience.
Don't trust Deb. Don't trust Deb.
And he's got all these art things everywhere, and he just looks like he's crazy because he's so funny.
Yeah. And why are you bringing him up? What's that got to do with me?
No, because you're like, you would like his house because his writing.
No, I wouldn't. No, I wouldn't look at this. I'd say, look, here's what I judge people. Are you interested in Ion? Tell him a bit about Ion somehow in the conversation. If he doesn't bite, I'm not interested in him. He's a fucking idiot. You know, so I don't care what they've done. The test is, can you get on board here? That's
no, me and Ion are good friends. We get along.
No, you don't. No, Ion doesn't get along with anybody. Ion is here to wake you up, to help you ascend, and there's no... Remember that quote? We can play that. This is important.
Well, Deb, have you asked Ion questions?
Yes, I have.
How many times?
You know, like a handful.
You called on the show?
Yes, he's been on the show.
I've talked to him. Even the guy who's talking, Bob, right now, he even said, Debbie, ask some questions. What are your questions? And I asked him a lot of questions.
And he was probably easy on you.
He always is really, we compete, like we're compatible. We don't go against.
Your signs get along, okay?
No, I'm being serious.
Well, we're not.
Well, that's your problem, honey.
No, not my problem. You're the one complaining. I'm not complaining about myself not being serious. Stop it.
No. Me and Ion are compatible.
Well, Ion, not the Ion you're talking to, but the Ion that is non-physical is you, and you would be non-physical. You would be compatible with your non-physical.
Oh, I see.
It helps you. It protects you.
Uh-huh.
So you're saying nothing. That's why we're laughing. Everybody here considers Ion their best friend. But the issue where the confusion comes in is Ion the talker, the talking hologram, is not necessarily your friend. This is Ion, the non-physical, being able to create, thanks to the chip body and all the other mutations going on, the non-physical has come forth to create. It's kind of obsolete. Doesn't care about helping Deb anymore. Deb's already protected.
Why didn't Ion come about, like, say, in 2000?
Well, he was, Ion, as non-physical, is always here. So you would say, why isn't the talking hologram here in 2000? Well, Ion would say they were here influencing, putting stuff in the movies. They say that they were around me and Carolyn J.W. about 2 years before March 2009. So they've been planning and scheming over the last, 10 years. And being here. But, yes, they did not speak till I was damn fucking ready for them. I had many other appointments I had to deal with. And then finally, who was it? How did J.W. started fucking pestering me with all the ghosts he was seeing and going to the parallel worlds. I said, okay, what's going on? And I didn't do anything. He told me I didn't do anything. Then Dr. Beter had to come to him as a ghost and say hi to Bob. And Beter knew how to get me. And so I listened. I said, Beter said that? I said, well, I'm going to talk to these ghosts because they sound like the Evergreens, who had stopped in 2004. So I, on March 18, 2009, I assumed I was going to contact the Evergreens that were hanging around JW. Mm-hmm. Turned out that was the biggest misunderstanding that ever could happen in history. It was not the Evergreens. It was a talking hologram, which was going to change the world. And many Ionettes now see the world changing around them just within their friends. Kim talks about that a lot.
Did the Evergreens ever give you, tell you about signs or a heads up that Ion was coming soon?
Nothing in particular, but when we left Toronto in 93, but I had my last session in May 92 in Toronto, and then I went and lived in New York, and then I would come back to Toronto every couple of years and then meet with Michael Blake Reed and Ellie in the Town Inn and have sessions with Ion. I mean, with the Evergreens, and that would be through the 90s. But my last session in May 92, they said a kind of a goodbye, and they said, you will go forth, and you will help a lot of people on an international level. You will make contacts. You will help people on a, big global level. And that happened. That was an accurate prediction.
What kind of help are you giving me?
Well, I'm offering. I offered a fuck you, give you an orgasm. You hadn't had one in a fucking couple of years.
You didn't take his offer, Deb.
Hey. I did what?
You didn't. She didn't take your offer.
That's right. So I offered to help, but we don't stick around. There's too many other people who want to fuck me, so I don't. If you say no, bye. We move on.
No, you got to respect Carolyn D.
Oh, she has great respect. She usually joins in.
That's crazy.
That's crazy. We're see, the Boston conservative mind is what we're witnessing here.
I know. Is Boston too conservative for you guys?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, very, very. Too
conservative.
L.A. and New York barely keep up with me.
He's so conservative.
Yeah. Iron Dome is the most non-conservative, radical, leading, bleeding edge you'll ever experience.
Where is the best place to live, in your opinion?
No, wait, Tim, fix your mic. You're yeah, don't do that. Move, step back from the microphone. I'm trying to find my message to her. What was it called? RNA, Ion's New Agenda.
These drugs are not to make you happy.
Yeah, we're not here to make you happy. Ion says we're only here for your ascension. Well, no, we're only here for the ascended. So that means we're only you have to be ascended even to dig what's going on. There it is, new RNA pitch. Let's see what this says. Listen to this, Deb.
This product is only for ascending people.
Mm-hmm.
Not for unhealthy people, not people who are sick, not people who got all these problems.
We're not here to cure anything. We're not here to help anything. We're not trying to do anything. We're not trying to make you happy. We're not trying to prove your happiness. We're not trying to see that you're whether or not you're happy. We are not here that we did not. This product was not created for your benefit, for your pleasure, or for your enjoyable delightment. Not for that. It's only for the ascending.
Isn't that awesome? That's
it
our
is.
Show. It's only for the ascended.
It is. It's awesome. Now, how did you meet Roxy?
When I had, I knew I had to meet JW last summer, 2014. I knew I had to be in various cities in Europe to meet with people, including the Vatican people, with JW. So I said, well, I haven't been running around New York City looking at galleries and stuff for years. So I made a point of spending time on my own in these various cities. And I decided, well, I haven't been in Berlin since 1936. And Roxy had, she was starting to post on my Facebook page or something. She had been very quiet and dormant for years. And then I said, well, she's in Berlin. Maybe she can show me around. So I emailed her and said, hey, I'm going to be in Berlin at some point this summer. Can I meet you? And she said, sure. And then she offered that I could stay at her place. And then she said, why don't we make a video while you're here? Because she was starting to get into, well, she'd been studying Maya McClune stuff and all that. And so I went there with the intention of making a video, but then I was a lot different than what she expected, so she just videotaped me 24/7, so to speak, going around the museums and all that, and doing different things, and then that began her postings.
Oh,
and,
I see.
So it was a great meeting. I'm really glad I met her. See, when I talked to her in early 2011, when she was trying to have a session, she was very depressed and sounded to me like an art groupie. I didn't even know she was a composer. She would talk about electronic composers, and she would go and talk about events she'd go to. So I thought she was just a despondent, ridiculous consumer of art, and had no idea that she was very creative. But she was not, you know, almost suicidal. She said if we had not shown up, and she'd been listening to us since late 2009, early 2010, it kept her going, but her boyfriend hated the sound of Ion, so she'd be playing it all day long listening. So she was studying it, but depressed. And if Ion, she says in retrospect, if Ion hadn't showed up, she probably would have committed suicide at some point.
And, do you think that's true?
Yes, because she had a lot of, we know a lot more about her now. She had a lot of ambitions and talents and did a lot of things. But she gradually got on the drops. And so when I spoke to her in 2011, She even had trouble hooking up and getting the session done. Like, she seemed like incompetent. So then I never spoke to her until 3 years later. She did one private session, and that was that. Never spoke to her, never heard from her. But then in late 2013, early 2014, she started posting, saying things on my Facebook page, like enthusiastic statements. Well, we learned later that she really got influenced by the six-day Bob Fest. She tried to keep up with me, tried to stay awake, and of course collapsed after, 20 hours, and couldn't believe that I was still going for 6 days, and said that was proof to her that the drops really worked, or there was something happening to me that was worth paying attention to. And then she felt more, started to get the idea, oh, maybe I should participate a bit more. So then she started posting, and that was odd, but I was not paying much attention to her, and that was through 2013. Then we get into 2014, and then I said, well, I'll take advantage of her being in Berlin and set it up. But little did I know that a week before I emailed her, she was in an art gallery, and Ian came to her and said, report to Bob.
Wow.
You've heard that story. We've said this story.
That I don't remember that one. Cause
so many times, Deb. I can't believe you've never heard
times.
That story before.
Yes.
Oh, maybe I heard it. It was so many details. Sometimes it's hard to keep up.
Yeah, I talk too long. Yes, you want to get blipped, right?
No, it's not you. I don't mean you. I just mean
it's
with
you.
Everybody.
Yeah, it's you. You can't.
And with everybody's input, and then one subject, it goes to another, and then another, and then.
Yes,
am
it
I
is
right?
A circus here. Yeah, so it's a circus for newbies.
No,
for
it's
newbies,
a lot of information to take on at once,
Yeah, especially
right?
From Boston. You're used to a lower pace of life and pace of information turnover.
Hey, we're the smartest city. We've got the best hospitals, best universities, right?
Mm. Well, that's your problem. Who would go to a hospital? Who would go to a university? You're really good at the 20th century, but we're well into the 21st century, and everything you got going good there is obsolete.
Do you think so?
No, I'm helping making them obsolete.
There, but where can you go? Like what?
Here, Deb. Here,
Hawaii?
This is where you go. No, the whatyouth.com, whatever we are.
Yeah.
to payday. We are the most advanced educational hospital university going.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
See what I mean, people? I mean, it's entertaining talking to Deb, but does anybody have some others? Okay, let me just go a few more topics here. Then I have, I had a face rash. This is back in June 4th, 1980, and they say lack of zinc. And then I get them explaining Zappa, and my notes say yin-yang, main symbol. He balances his melody with others. Then I ask about McLuhan, and they bring up the book Phone Calls from the Dead, which is amazing. It was an actual book about people encountering, phone calls from spirits, which is what we've been doing since I started playing this stuff on CKLN. Phone Calls from the Dead.
Phone Calls from the Dead.
Now, why is that? Why is that?
Wow.
Why does that echo happen? Anyways. Then I ask about Harold Innes, and he was in the cleanup position. I have here symbiosis between stick and man. That must be a caveman media / global ecology. And then they talked about the Samizdat in Russia. Then I asked about Mae Brussel and her information on the neo-Nazis, and they went into somebody named Jordan, a famous guy named Jordan was shot. They went into details on that. And they said Mae Brussel was very close to the solution, and she would be much gratified in 2 years. So that's some of the topics of the first session. I did another one 6 months later. I did this one by phone, and then on December 6th, I went to their place out in the country, and I saw their high-tech studio. And so there was that session. Then I didn't do another session for 5 years because I waited to see if their predictions they gave me in the first two sessions came true, and a lot of them did. So I was impressed, and then I started in 19. I got my lawyer and James Kidney. Who is the guy? James Kidney. We had him at the time of the end of Fringe. Remember, James Kidney is a Canadian actor who played the leader of the Watchers in the final episodes, and he was on the show talking after that.
He was the leader.
He was the leader of the Watchers, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I know. I've heard many times that he was in the Fringe, but I didn't know which role he played.
Yeah, he played, well, it was totally Bob's anachrony, because we resumed the battle that we had left off in 1986, 87. I had broken off from him. And so it acted this out. So 5 years later, like I did June 4th, 1980, December 6th, 1980, 5 years later, on November 19th, 1985, which I think was the day that Reagan and Gorbachev had their summit in Iceland, and they had a press conference, and that may have been when Reagan said, well, our real problem is the coming UFOs are going to be a global attack, so we should unite. So the beginning of the end of the Cold War, I decided to have a session with the Irenes, but I split it with James Kidney and my lawyer, Deb Aaron. So I have three sets of notes. I only did one-third of the session, of the 60 minutes. And
why did you have
then,
a lawyer?
Well, you know, I'm Bob. You know, things were tough in those days. It was very violent for us in the 80s, 70s and 80s. I was in Secret Council 10. I was in factional warfare. I was an intelligence agent, so to speak. Carolyn was shaking up the medical profession. It was a tense time. So if you hear CKLN, Brian, you hear Ian Arlett, my bodyguard, was there, right there on the show. You hear us cheering when I won the position on March 3rd or 2nd or 3rd, 1988. I won the Secret Council 10 chairmanship. You just asked me if I'm CIA. I was above CIA. I was with the Illuminati, historical oligarchs.
How do I know all this is true?
Well, you don't, and it's probably not true. But you should enjoy the stories. You should just pretend Bob's a fucking nut, but an entertaining nut who's making himself available to fuck you when you're ready.
You're funny.
Yeah, I'm funny, right, Jermaine? Am I funny, Jermaine?
Yes.
One guy, I don't think Bill laughs. I don't think we can get Bill laughing for some reason. But
That's true. I've never heard him laugh.
He's probably cracking up on you.
Yeah, well, he's heard me say this 100 times. He's fucking bored shitless of this kind of talk. But what was I just? I didn't finish. So in November 1985, I had a session with by phone with James Kidney and Deb. With the Evergreens, and I was kind of impressed. So then they came back. That was by phone, so they were in Vancouver. No, they were probably still at Black Stock. He doesn't move to Vancouver. He leaves Philippa, his second wife, in early 86 or something, goes out to Vancouver, hooks up with Ellie Roselle, and then they come back to the Town Inn, which they'd never done before, in September 86. And then they would come back at least once a year, often maybe occasionally every 6 months, whatever. And then from September 86, I did a session with them, or a couple of sessions every time they came through the city.
Oh.
And it added up to about 24 of them in the end. No, it added up to 60. Let me see. I did 24 years. I think it's 60 sessions I have. 64 sessions that I paid for. They did a couple of public performances. I went to those. I bought their cassettes of other symposiums they had. I had a big Evergreens collection. And it prepared me for ION, no doubt. Because I was talking to Marshall McLuhan, Frank Zappa, published these interviews. I was interacting. Nobody really, they go to mediums, but it was all hokey. It never got as good as I had with the Evergreens. Actually, to do an interview with Zappa, the spirit of Frank Zappa, and Zappa's widow would hear it, Gail Zappa, and said, that's real, but I don't believe people can talk to spirits, so Jerry Fialko and Bob must have faked this thing and made up and found unpublished Zappa interviews, and Jerry worked for Zappa, so that could have been possible, and we published it as if we did. But she heard it, she read it, and she said, this is Frank, and it made her seem real, but she didn't believe it happened. I sent her the cassette tape of it, I'm pretty sure, eventually, and I never heard back from her. I don't know what
she thought. Oh, Gail, you mean?
Yeah, Gail Zappa, right.
Mm.
Now, how did you meet the Evergreens again?
I heard Michael Blake Reed being interviewed on Jane Hotton's Q107 Toronto FM station, rock station, in May 1980.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, this guy can do it by phone, and he has 7,000 entities. That was new. Nobody channeled 7,000 entities. That had never been heard of before. I never heard of it.
no one really gets attracted to that stuff, you know, like as much as other things. So what is it in your personality that attracted you to all this?
I spelled that out. I read that psychic book when I was a kid. I'm sure that had an influence. And then I met Dave Worser in Cosmic Awareness. So I was exploring the occult, the New Age, and it's also part of the Priory Scion historically. You know, my parents and their bosses did this stuff. But so I was used to it. I was a genius at it, so to speak. I was I was a prodigy. I was a prodigy of interacting with non-physical.
Read that magazine, Sedona?
I looked at that once, and it's ridiculous. I saw that on the stands 20 years ago. Yeah, that's all night. It's all bullshit. You see, once you have the evergreens, you have real channeling. It's not this light, divine light bullshit that you get out of Sedona. I mean, the CIA and the State Department used the evergreens.
Oh.
And if you look at that,
a lot of people are attracted to like psychic phenomenon and things that the information that the evergreens would give, but not everyone is aligned to it, or it doesn't line up for them as it did for you.
Well, they just were stupid. They didn't take advantage of the evergreens. They've done, I think it's 11,000 sessions in 30 years in 19 countries. They had clients all over the world. They have a fantastic series you can buy where they went to Peru in the early 80s, and they went around to all the famous UFO sites, Nazca, the Nazca lines, and all these different places. And the Evergreens would give sessions at every one of these, you could call them eco-tourist places, but they're psychic tourist places. And those sessions were recorded, and the woman who sponsored them was high up in the Peruvian government, and she handed it around to the cabinet. And those tapes became legendary in Peru. And the famous book, The Celestine Prophecy?
Yes, I have that.
Yeah, well, go back and think about it. Remember, he'd get a new recording or new information? He got like 10 he was informed.
I remember vaguely, okay.
Yeah, well, that was based on the distribution of the Evergreens tapes. That book, James, whatever.
Are you sure? Are you positive?
Well, I was told by Michael and Blake. Michael is now no longer here, and I was told that by Michael Ellie, and told not to ever say it in public. But I'll say it now that Michael's dead, and there's no more Evergreens. So the point is, the Celestine Prophecy came out in the early 90s. Was that James guy who wrote the book? He had encountered these tapes, so he made a novel out of it. So that's something pretty fantastic. That book had a big effect on people. That was a very popular book.
I bought that book, and then I saw the movie of it.
Oh, I didn't know they made a movie of it.
And they showed how it's like the couple fighting, and it's like an energy, and you have to step back and just be part of the energy, not the they showed a couple fighting, and then they showed you that you don't have to go into that deep into the argument. You just try to, like, let the energy, so that you don't fight, that you're not competing with your partner.
Well, that's an absurd notion. All fucking relationships are competitions. We know that. What do you think the battle between me and Carolyn is all about? It's Pritzy's Honor. Ever see that movie?
Yeah, but she wins every time she tells you off.
Oh, that's well. What about me stooping to conquer, making her overconfident for the big match, which hasn't happened yet?
But you back down when she's like she's got her gun. And she
well, when she's the one making my fucking meals, you'd back down too, for fuck's sake. But I've made her famous because I brought forth Ion, and that's fucking saved her damn medical career.
That's what my boyfriend tells me. He's a chemical engineer, and he's going to hire me to do all the talking.
What? Talking to who?
You know, because he's trying. Okay, he's.
No, I don't know. I don't know.
Okay, he's a chemical engineer, and he's trying to be. He's doing some contracts with like biomedical and doctors in England, and he's trying to make a device for asthma or some kind of invention. I don't know.
Yeah.
So So he's telling
yeah,
me.
Yeah, and
I
he wants you to do the talking when you fucking start
yeah,
lying
and
about
said,
it.
I said, you're going to tell me what to say because I don't know what the hell anything is.
Yeah, she convinced
him. Where does he want you to say this stuff? What, he wants you to have a press conference?
Yeah, something like a, I don't know. Like, I don't remember something like marketing or whatever.
Something together.
Yeah.
So one thing about Deb, she does evoke entertaining scenarios.
I said,
here.
You know what? I don't know what to say. I don't. You're going to teach me what to say. And you know what he said? He said, you can make stuff up.
Well, so we know you're not very good
here.
At that.
That's how she comes here, so she can learn
yeah,
to talk.
She can't even make up anything up. She makes up being stupid or something. But here's the thing, Deb. You are in my hologram.
Oh.
Your boyfriend and you are acting out me and Carolyn. We're the one who came up with the fucking device, the eye block, and Carolyn's the one who's the PR, and I'm the chemical engineer. See, you're just a shadow of me.
Oh, we're trying to be you guys.
That's right.
Yeah.
You're forced to be me because I'm the